And you can find out about UCLA Theater, Film, and Television by going to the UCLA website, tft.ucla.edu. And there you will see a menu item called From the Desk of Dean Celine. And you will see all of my speeches and all of my vision for what I intend to do as Dean of UCLA TFT. It also includes many pictures. You will see the joy emanating from my face about how much I am so honored by this role of helping to launch the next generation of voices in film, theater, and television today. It's happy and it's wonderful. And I am very clear about my job, which is helping the next generation create nonstop the originality of their own voices and stories.
And thank you for your time tonight, Dean Celine.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
This is Sound Effects, a radio playground, a compendium of radio theater, comedy, and the audio arts, with your host, Jerry Stern. Very spooky evening to you. I'm Jerry Stearns, and you have reached Sound Effects Radio Playground. So I have something for you tonight that is appropriate for the spooky season here. Although we're broadcasting on Sunday night, so we're a little short of actual scary day, but we've got something that fits and yet is probably more akin to silly than scary. It's called Back to Frankenstein. And briefly, Dory is a college student, and she has been assigned to write a book report on Mary Shelley's seminal horror novel, Frankenstein, or the modern Prometheus. Now, as so many teenagers are wont to do, she decides that it is much more effective, much more fun anyway, to not bother to read the book. Instead, she's going to go and talk to Mary Shelley personally, talk to the author and find out what to write about it. So, in order to do that, she goes and borrows a time machine from a grad student she knows over in the engineering department. Now, trying to organize the time and space coordinates in a beta version of a prototype of a time machine is somewhat problematic. And, well, let's say the problems do arise. So that's the setup for it. It's coming up soon, but I found out that there will not be room at the other end of this program to include all the credits. So I thought I'd better put them here, up front, just in case. So, starring as Dory, the main character, is Celeste Alvarado. Starring as Mary Shelley is Valerie Walker, and Victor Frankenstein is played by Vince Paul. Others in the cast include Vince Hancock, Damini Fisher, Mike O'Neill, Sarah Oliver, Steve Gagala, Kirith Brisnick, and Jeff Menager. It's written and produced by Les Light for the University of California, Davis, Radio Theater. And this tale is the winner of a Gold Ogle Award for the Best Horror Audio Drama in 2000. So, it has credentials, shall we say. Now, before we get to that story, I still have a couple of minutes, so let me bring you something of an entertainment nature, okay?
Are you ready, Igor?
Ready, Dr. Frankenstein?
At last. My great experiment, my creation, comes to life.
Master,
what is it, Igor?
Want to go out for pizza after?
We'll see. Now get ready.
Ready?
Throw the switch.
Oh, gee, I thought it would be more exciting.
Quiet, Igor. We must have run out of power, but I... Igor, do you know something about this? Igor!
Master, we've run out of money. Oh. I couldn't pay the electric bill.
Wait, there must be someone who will fund my great experiment. Bring pen and paper, Igor. Hurry into the study.
Right here, Doctor, right here.
Now, let's see. Hold that candle closer. Dear National Institute of Science, how are you? I am fine. Please send me $1,000,000. No, this isn't working. Dear McDonnell Douglas, I am a big fan of yours. No. Wait. Dear National Endowment for the Arts. I would like to apply for a grant. For a sort of collage. It would be a testament to recycling. I, of course, would be happy to sign an anti-obscenity clause. Maybe I shouldn't, Igor. It's a matter of principle.
A production of the Radio Pirates!
And a follow-up to the story from last summer's wacky season that had some listeners upset about the administration's use of DNA cloning to produce a line of invulnerable Frankenstein's monsters. Well, latest news from Scientists United for Government Grants indicates that the monsters keep going to pieces as a result of special forces fitness training. I guess an emotional monster doesn't make an effective weapon. This is Bill Undermutter for CNN No Evil News all over the globe.
That was an Undermutter Monster Update from the Fire Sign Theater's All Things Fire Sign in conjunction with NPR. And before that, it was Dr. Frankenstein's Grant. That was from Jay Rath's old Radio Pirates out of Madison, Wisconsin. Now, finally, let's get on to hear Dory as she prepares for writing her book report for school in Back to Frankenstein from Less Light.
Look at this. You know I'm doing this report on Mary Shelley's book Frankenstein? Anyway, I am. And this phone booth thing I just dragged in is a fully operational time machine. Instead of having to do all kinds of tough research and, like, spend lots of time reading the book and stuff, I'm just going to go back in time to interview Mary Shelley and have her tell me what to write. I'm borrowing it from this grad student in engineering who built it for his thesis. Actually, I'm paying him $30 to use it. Anyway, his advisors and all, they won't let him use it because it might mess up reality and the relationship between, like, cause and effect and stuff. So he's letting me use it. Cool, huh? See, I got the address and the space-time coordinates for Mary Shelley's location on October 1822 in Florence, Italy. I got this guy, Doug, who lives over in the dorms, to work out the coordinates. I think he likes me. Wow, dig this. Tonight is October 31st. It's hella whatever. And you know, you're not gonna believe this, but I saw this strange-looking woman with a big pointy hat lying over Kerr Hall on a broomstick. Don't roll your eyes at me. I saw it. Yeah, that reminds me. I gotta sweep out the kitchen when I get back. Yeah, and I also got this address and the coordinates for some guy actually named Victor Frankenstein in 1795. I ran across it in some old book at the library, but I don't think this has anything to do with all this because he's in the wrong country. It says Switzerland. Should be like Trans-Somalia or something. Anyhow, I'm off to Florence, Italy now. I got like 20 copies of the book for Mary Shelley to find. So when I get back, these puppies will be worth a fortune. This time machine thing is so cool. I swear you can do so much neat stuff with microchip semiconductor stuff. See, I just punch in the coordinates. It's all digital. Now I get in and shut the door. I'll be back in time for dinner. Here I go. Dizzy. I think I'm gonna yak. Better open the door and have... Hell?
Bonjour. Comment vous appelez-vous, mademoiselle?
Sorry, I don't speak Italian. Do you know where I can find a Signora Mary Shelley?
You are English?
American. Who the heck are you? Is this supposed to be Florence?
No, this is Geneva. You see, that is Jacques Rousseau's house across the street. I am Dr. Victor Frankenstein.
Yeah, sure you are. In Switzerland? Sheesh. Dang, this means I punched in the wrong coordinates. What are those numbers?
What are these books you're carrying? Frankenstein by Mary Shelley.
Hey, give that back, you cheesehead. That's gonna make me money. Ugh.
This is incredible.
Never mind. I have to get back to Florence in 1822. Keep the book. Here, let me punch this.
Who are you?
Go pedal your yogurt, clock boy.
Percy, thou art drowned and dead below these 4 months, and still I am beyond all consoling. I mourn you in this desolate twilight of autumn under these leafless poplars.
Stay, doors jammed.
Upon my soul, what is this strange contrivance that materializes out of the dusky air, even as an apparition?
Hey, somebody help me open this door!
Oh, I need air.
Dizzy, vertigo, nausea.
Who are you who appears so inexplicably?
I'm Dory Dingle. I don't suppose this is Florence, Italy.
Of course it is.
Godly. That's hellified.
Are you speaking English? Of a sort?
Oh, sure thing, homegirl. Hey, any chance you might be Mary Shelley?
Oh, why, indeed I am.
Solid. All right, I need you to help me with my homework. I got this burly paper due about your freaked out novel, and I got some books for you to sign. You could come up with something unique and personal for each. There's only the 20.
I have not the ease to divine your meaning. I yet still mourn the passing of my husband.
Yeah? What did he pass?
My dear husband, that most tender poet, Percy Shelley.
Is that his real name? Sounds like a little girly man.
He was drowned while sailing alone in the Gulf of Spezia. His body was washed ashore.
Go again, little buddy!
And burned there on a rude pile of gathered wood.
Yeah.
Presided over by Leigh Hunt and Lord Byron, his unburned heart was snatched from the flame. Had to wrestle it away from Leigh Hunt afterwards.
But now I have it. You have to help me with the school assignment. See, what's that thing you're holding there? It looks like a big prune.
This is Percy's heart.
Yuck.
I'm afraid I can't help you with your study.
Oh, have a heart? Look here. I traveled all the way from Davis, California, like... from 176 years in the future to see you.
The future? But how?
Like in this time machine thing, okay?
Time machine?
Hello? Isn't that what I just said?
You mean this contrivance travels through time?
What are you, bait? What is your damage? I just told you.
But how?
Like, I just told you I'm from the future. We're, like, way advanced over you, Dexters. We got all kinds of stuff you Waldos couldn't even understand. Karaoke, video games, beer bombs.
You must excuse me, but this is all passing strange. My life of late has not been easy in 8 years. I've had 5 pregnancies and only one child has survived. All these deaths and miscarriages. So many friends have died. It's all too much.
Not that I know exactly how this thing works. I got the wrong address on the first try and ended up in Geneva, Switzerland in 1795. Talking to this geek who's dressed up like George Washington, and he said he was Dr. Frankenstein, and he took one of the copies of your book.
Dr. Frankenstein? He has my book?
Yeah. So actually, I've only got like 19 copies now, but if you could sign...
We must go back. Don't you see what you've done? Well, you must take me there.
Shot who? Don't spaz. Mellow up. What is this?
We must go back. Take me in your machine.
Okay. Hang on. Just let me open the door.
We must go to Ingolstadt.
Where the heck is that?
We must go at once.
Here's the map. Try the coordinates.
What do these levers do?
How did that slide? Hey, don't mess with those. Oh, cripes.
Must extend the tracheal cartilage by another isothermal needle. Replace both primary bronchies to facilitate expanded lung capacity. Pleural cavities are large enough to accommodate two very large normal lungs in both right and left pleural cavity. It's mere child's play.
Mister, the meal is right.
Yes, bring it in. That new quadratus lumborum should do nicely. Need a little more slack in the sir's mail order.
Here's your Atlantis bulletin from the University Blue Trek, a package from the Anatomy Department in France, a reply from the Imperial University of Gießen, this week's penny saver and more junk mail.
The iliacus is perfectly supple.
Oh, look, a flyer for a new Gothic industrial dance club opening up over in Regensburg.
The reply from Gießen. What is
does it say?
I'll have a look. Well, they've turned down your grant proposal. They see no practical value in reanimating dead teeth.
Practical value? Those petty, vulgar little bourgeois worms. Whatever happened to pure research, academic inquiry, the eternal quest for knowledge means nothing to these small-minded shopkeepers. Never mind. Open the package. It should be that human heart I ordered. Where's that set of lungs I was working on? This place is a mess. Loose muscle tissue and spare intestines everywhere.
This hurt has gone bad.
What? I can't use this. It was supposed to be rushed by expressman. Those fools! What do they think? This is a box of cookies?
Do you want me to go dig up another body? Maybe this time we'll find a usable heart.
There's so little time. The whole reassembled body could spoil now. Where are those?
Oh, here they are.
Good. Hand me those lungs and the liver and stomach, and I'll attach the duodenum and jejun.
Here you are.
Get me the xylophone tape, the stapler, the crazy glue, and the caulking gun there. You wash your hands, right?
I ain't gonna do it now.
Never mind. Hold the splenetic artery.
Oh, did I tell you? They accepted me at my audition for the Ingolstadt Amateur Community Theater. I'll be performing Richard III. They like the way I drag my leg when I limp.
Now the ascending colon. Mind the hepatic flexure.
Now is the winter of our discontent, made glorious summer by this son of York, and all the clouds are lowered upon our house in the deep bosom of the ocean and buried.
Damn! Go see who that is while I tape on the esophagus.
Yes, master. Now are our brows bound with victorious wreath, our bruised arms hung up for monuments.
I've got the colon on backwards.
Our stirring alarms turned to merry meetings. Our grateful marches turned to delightful measures. This is where have had moved to wrinkle rent.
Oh, that machine. I feel ill. I haven't felt this bad since my last miscarriage.
Yeah, I could growl.
Who are you that after this coolest shower?
This is the ascending. This is the transverse.
You must see Dr. Frankenstein. I fear he may be employed in the most powerless and ill-advised endeavor.
Well,
I must see him.
Careful going down this wet gothic stone stairs.
Descending column. There. Now I've got it.
I think I got the wrong year. This is like 1798 or something.
There's the colonic veins and the central aortic artery. It's all in good shape.
Dr. Frankenstein, I must speak to you. No. It is just as I have
what?
Heard.
Who are you? How did you get in here? Eager!
This is poor, has smooth his wrinkled front. He keeps trembling in the lady's bedchamber.
I must dissuade you from this disastrous path.
Through the fastidious pleasing of a loot.
I don't get it. On the map here, it looks like this place Ingolstadt is in Germany, and Dr. Frankenstein came from Geneva, which is in Switzerland. I saw all those movies. Frankenstein is supposed to be in Pennsylvania, right? What is it? Transylvania. I mean, Switzerland?
You! You're the girl who brought the book! The book that changed my life. That foretold my destiny. It was like a dream. A book with my name. A book that told how I, Dr. Victor Frankenstein, would create life. How I would shape a living, breathing form from dead tissues.
So what's going on? Yuck. Ugh, there's arms and legs and muscles and organs and guts all over the place.
Oh, this is a dire undertaking.
I don't care if he is an undertaker. This place is a mess.
Great work indeed.
This book, which fell into my hands seemingly by chance, has inspired me to dare what no man has dared. Or this bespoke my innermost secret aspirations that I could not admit even to myself. Nothing can stop me now.
Doctor, if you have read my book, then you know what horror this world will bring. How can you proceed knowing all the death, ruin, and desolation that will be when you bring this creature to life?
Yeah, you read the book, so you know what's going to happen. It doesn't make sense.
Well, I didn't actually finish the book.
What?
I got to the part where the creature is going to come to life. And I got so excited at the idea that the creature of dead limbs and organs could be brought to life, the idea that I could bring it to life, well, I just put the book down and set to work doing it.
You never meant to finish the book?
I meant to get back to it. I've been meaning to, but I've been busy.
Oh.
So I guess you're saying things don't turn out good, huh, in the book?
Oh, it's a tragedy and a horror story.
Yes, I did notice there was some kind of foreshadowing going on there. And if you don't mind my saying to a fair lady, I think that was a mistake. This should be a happy story. It's about a brilliant man of science who does a wonderful thing.
You mean build a monster?
I know. You want to make the story interesting. You want to get in on its whole romantic literary movement bandwagon. You romantic writers are all very deep on all this doom and gloom and people with big black capes standing on windy cliffs running a lot. That is a certain adolescent charm, I suppose. But how about something different? How about a real feel-good story about a man who digs up dead bodies, cuts them, half these pieces together to make a creature and brings it to life?
I read the book all the way through.
Think of it. How wonderful to create life without having to depend in any way on the female reproductive system and all the messy complications that involve.
I thought your book had some interesting psychological implications.
What is that object in your hand?
Well, this is my dead husband's heart. Percy Bysshe Shelley, the poet.
Bysshe?
Really? May I see it?
Well, I...
Thank you.
Gross, isn't it? His pals cremated him and saved the heart.
Remarkably well preserved. Some damage to the left subclavian.
I thought it was an entertaining read, not that anyone cares what I think.
Might I please have my husband's heart back?
Why should anyone pay any attention to me with my bad leg and my hunchback?
Igor, if you could dip this withered organ in my special special respiratory laser. It could be restored to both its function.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like I'm a real person or anything, is it?
Igor!
Dasha! Yes, master, of course.
Give me that heart.
Here, Igor!
I got it.
Give that to me.
Hey!
Give it!
Igor, toss it back.
Here, master.
Keep away.
Are you insane? Give me my Percy's heart.
I got it.
Dr. Frankenstein.
Now, who's this?
I've been searching all over Europe for you, doctor.
This is a private laboratory. I can't have all sorts of odd people wandering in here off the street. Tonight is critical.
Please permit me to introduce myself. I am Dr. Dipple.
Dr. Dipple? You're putting me on.
Dipple. Johann Conrad Dipple.
No, that's impossible. Dr. Johann Conrad Dipple was born in 1673. That would make you...
Exactly.
Good heavens.
Quite.
But then you mean to say...
Precisely.
But that's...
Impossible.
Unless...
Yes.
Can it be true?
Make no mistake.
What?
The elixir of life?
The elixir of life. The elixir of life?
The legends are true, then. Dr. Johann Conrad Dipple von Frankenstein.
Not the true Frankenstein.
But still an actual historical personality whose life is veiled in the wildest sorts of rumors and legends.
And a dark romantic mystique.
Physician, alchemist, natural philosopher, and theologian of the dark side of metaphysics.
His name's Dipple?
Yes. So what? I am as much a Frankenstein as this Swiss pharmacist here. I was born in the actual castle Frankenstein.
Oh, in Transylvania?
No, in Franconia.
From childhood, a solitary rebel, and as a scholar, a scandalous renegade, a dark Promethean figure, whose boundless intellect was only surpassed by his arrogance and overweening pride.
Ha! I'm so much smarter than any of you.
Dr. Dippet, whose overbearing insolence got him ejected from the University of Gießen, who taught then at the Imperial University of Strasbourg, but was forced to flee from authorities because of a certain mysterious incident, rumored to involve grave robbing and body snatching.
Fools! What did they know of science?
Of course! What would they know? They had no voices within to guide them.
Exactly.
You mean voices in your head?
Of course!
This is true insight.
Returning to Darmstadt, he studied the treatise of Postel, the astroscience of the Kabbalist Ramalul, the arcane works of the magic practicing renegade monk, brother Basil Valentinius, and the works of Paracelsus and Cornelius Agrippa.
Who? What?
Stuff that goes way over your pointy little heads, I'm sure.
Dipple was paid by the Landgrave of Hesse to discover the secret formula for making gold.
True enough. I perfected the Philosopher's Stone. Then I worked day and night, cooking silver and mercury. I worked endlessly in a cloud of mercury vapor.
Doesn't that mercury affect your mind?
Great clouds of the stuff. Then I started to see things. They tried to say I was insane. Can you imagine that? Me!
It is said you actually found the formula to make gold.
Of course I did. Gerber and Travesinus. They said to use salt and sulfur, those knuckleheads. I nearly blew up the whole laboratory when I added the sulfur, but I did it. I made gold out of silver and mercury.
But he broke the secret law of the alchemist.
Secret law?
This stupid thing. The alchemist is not supposed to use the gold he makes for personal gain. I mean, good grief, why bother? You can make gold, but don't try to profit off it. Who dreamed this up? Could have been my chance to fund more ambitious work, research such as your own. I was going to buy Castle Frankenstein, put up a down payment, take out a mortgage. With easy financing, I could have moved my whole laboratory into the dungeon.
Just perfect to start reanimating monsters made out of dead bodies.
Yes, maybe, if I wanted to.
But the formula for gold was lost.
Aye, it was the weirdest thing. It just disappeared.
Who the heck took it? The alchemist cops?
I was destitute. I wandered from country to country.
You continued experiments however you could.
I had developed the formula for gold, but I had other interests too. Like discovering the secrets of life. That is why I'm here, to see you recreate life.
And you shall.
Master, I have...
Wow, so this is the guy who gave you the idea for the story.
There's so much more to the story than a crazy alchemist making monsters. It's fascinating what it says about the author's frustrated need for a nurturing mother. The story of a motherless creature driven to violence by feelings of abandonment and exclusion. Surely, Miss Shelley, this must be reflective of your own formative emotional experience. What with your mother, Mary Wollstonecraft, dying when you were 10 days old, your feelings of emotional abandonment by your father, William Godwin, and your virtual neglect by your stepmother. It would seem this monster is a creation of your reactive and violent childhood fantasies regarding your father and stepmother, and perhaps even regarding your mother herself, who to the irrational perspective of a child actually betrayed you by dying.
Wow, how Sylvia Plath.
And the monster's murder of little William is quite fraught with personal meaning.
What is this twisted little hunchback talking about?
Mary Wollstonecraft and William Godwin were two of the leading social philosophers of their day. They saw themselves as in the forefront of social progress. Godwin particularly was regarded as a great prophetic leader. When your mother was carrying you, your parents were convinced you were the son who would take up your father's prophetic mission and refer to you as little William. After you were born and your mother died, your father attempted to raise you to take the prophetic role, but then your father
father remarried, and when you were 6 years old, his wife bore him a son who was deemed Little William.
Who are you talking about?
This woman, Mary Shelley.
She wrote the book Frankenstein.
The book?
She wrote a book about a man named Frankenstein who makes a living creature out of dead human bodies.
Yes, but what?
Apparently you, Dr. Dipper, were the inspiration for this book.
But how?
Fascinating, isn't it? Hard to make its life, which in turn is imitated by life again. Or does this go over your head, Dr. Dipple?
Not at all. I understand perfectly. I have a quick and subtle mind which easily grasps these complex situations. You were saying something about this woman, this Little William here.
My name is Mary.
Little William represents a number of entangled associations. He is Mary's ideal persona, his favorite child, and successor to the father. But he is also the male child who displaced Mary from this role. On its other level, Little William is also a pre-created social role imposed on her, rather against her own individual will, and then revoked before she could individuate her own feelings toward that role. Still more subtler, Little William is also William Godwin, her father, who, an increasingly disillusioned young girl, found inadequate to the inflated image he had created. So you see how the name Little William becomes the locus of tremendous repressed anger and hostility, but also ambivalence and overwhelming, if to some extent also contradictory emotions.
I never wrote about anyone named Igor. In my story, Dr. Frankenstein works alone. In order for him to be a truly mythic figure, he must be solitary in his work.
I came to see a creature brought to life, not listen to this prattle.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Shelley, if you find my analysis of your book disconcerting.
I felt I would be better off working with an assistant. There's a lot of drudgery involved in reanimating creatures. Where are the sutures?
Do you think when Prometheus stole fire from the gods, he had some limping, twisted little troll tagging along psychoanalyzing him?
Of course, this novel is largely written out of Mrs. Shelley's own natural dread and horror of the experience of childbirth, which she found constantly linked to agony, death, and tragedy.
The whole process of female childbirth is so chaotic and revolting, it's...
Why do you want to create life this way anyhow?
Just so nasty, so grotesque. Women can be, of course, very attractive and enchanting. One can, of course, be enchanted by their beauty, even strongly attracted. But then, when you see or think about certain parts of their bodies, there's something about that whole business with the female sexual and reproductive anatomy that repels and...
Master, I have marinated this in the respirative elixir.
Some difficulty in performing, that is to say, I suffer some dysphagia...
It has restored this withered organ to potent functional health.
Oh, yes, you mean Mr. Shelley's heart. Yes, let's put that in and attach the artery.
Stop!
More duct tape, Igor.
That doesn't belong to you.
No, let him proceed.
We shall begin pumping in the blood and stitching together the rest of the skin.
Duct tape?
Yes. Procreation must be liberated from the female anatomy.
He has
human nature
my foot.
Is dualistic.
He has brought my work to fulfillment.
The kernel.
The creation of life.
Mind and
not
body.
To the irrational
male.
Carnal instincts.
Female.
Not by the blind and spotless functions of the body.
Let me get this straight.
But by the
you
application of
biological reproduction is repulsive. You mean
here
sex,
is the
gestation,
chaos
childbirth,
has
sure.
Under control by
that all gets kind
of
icky, but this is pretty messy.
I don't get the touching I'm going.
I mean, here you are in this creepy old dungeon with arms and legs and internal organs lying all over the place.
They laugh at me.
Here, hold this.
What is it?
Skin.
No, take it.
Just hold it a minute.
What's with all these eyeballs?
We have tried different ones.
They're all looking at me.
Here, I'll take that.
Yes, take it.
It's bubbling. Thoroughly.
Then you understand the inevitable disaster that will result from what you're taking part in.
I just heard him head up in the narrative.
You're not even that actual character from the original story.
I must begin pumping in the blood, already treated with restorative and resurrected elixirs.
Skin is kind of loose, though. It kind of hangs on him.
Loose?
Yeah, he looks kind of baggy.
Yes, the skin. We should have taken it in a little.
I'm not a tailor.
No matter. My work is nearly complete. Look at him. The first of his kind. Look at the size of him. The span of his chest and his shoulders. The frame and musculature. Igor, administer the animating catalyst injection.
He's
magnificent.
He is beautiful because he will live.
Ah, he moved.
He's alive.
Oh, no, it's disgusting.
What?
God, what have I done? It's alive. It's hideous.
Wait a minute, Doc. This is what you wanted.
As an abstract idea, it was fascinating. As a complex of interconnected systems of dead tissues, it was interesting. But as a living, breathing thing, it makes me sick. I dare not even look at it. This was all a horrible mistake.
Oh, now you decide. No, Victor, you must not leave. I tell you!
My God! He's got hold of Dr. Dimple!
It's revolting to see it alive. It makes me ill. I'm going to...
Doctor, no, I just mopped the floor.
I hate to be the one to say I told you so.
No, you don't. That's so passive-aggressive. This is so typical of your whole attitude.
You think you are so smart. You can't even keep the narrative context straight.
I've got to get out of here.
Mister, you can't go now.
You deal with it, Igor. I'm going to my room. I need to have a nap.
Hey, you big freak. Let go of that little freak.
Dr. Frankenstein, you're not being a responsible mad scientist.
Just leave me alone. I'm going to my room. I need some time to myself.
The creature is escaping. Let him go. Frankenstein is right.
I don't think the big thing wanted to kill you, or even meant to attack you.
Yes, obviously he's disoriented and upset, confused.
Sure, he could have just pulled your head off if he wanted.
It's revolting. Disgusting. It's all been a mistake. I must go. The creature has run off. He's gone.
We must get into the time machine. We must proceed to the place and day of the creature's first murder and prevent that first fatal act.
Now we can't keep your narrative context straight. You think it all has to happen just like in your silly book?
Oh, shut up!
The problems of this premise are that...
I know. The problems of the premise are much more complex than to allow for a systematic recapitulation of the incidents of the fictional book. Still, as a writer of the romantic movement, I am driven by instinct and intuition and disregardful of dull logic.
Yeah, okay. So let's get into the time machine. Where do you want to go?
Wait for me. I'm going to...
Yes, there's definitely more to the story, and it's all coming up after these words from Fresh Air Radio.
You're listening to Fresh Air Community Radio.
KFAI, 90.3 FM in Minneapolis.
And St. Paul!
Online at KFAI.org.
Radio without boundaries!
Hello, this is Simon Jones, the original and genuine Arthur Dent of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, except no substitutes. You're listening to Sound Effects, a radio playground on KFAI, Fresh Air Radio. I'll do that again. You're listening to Sound Effects, a radio playground on KFAI, Fresh Air Radio.
Hello again, I'm Jerry Stearns, and tonight on Sound Effects, we're listening to preparations for a book report on Mary Shelley's seminal science fiction novel, Frankenstein or the Modern Prometheus. This comes to us from the University of California in Davis and produced by a fellow with the unlikely name of Les Light. So let's go back to Frankenstein.
Oh, heartless humanity that spurns me at every turn, and curse he that made such that I am a monster, a hideous misshapen parody of a human form. I am feared and despised by all who catch sight of me. I am driven from all habitation. They throw stones and shoot guns at me. I have wandered the lonely and desolate places. Concealed in a disused shed for a time, I spied on a small family of folk, and marking their words and watching them closely, I learned the art of speech and meanings of words.
William!
I learned...
William!
Understood... speech... while I hid. I grew most fond of this little family and did them secret kindnesses. I longed to approach them and win their acceptance, but when at length I did thus, they beheld me with terror and revulsion. They beat me with cudgels and drove me away in misery. I have found some books in abandoned places, and with these I taught myself to read the written words. Returning thence to the old laboratory from where I had escaped, I found it abandoned, but I discovered my creator's notes and learned his name.
Justin can't find me, or maybe take my way in. Frolic.
I have swore vengeance on this feckless man who brought me into this world, monster that I am.
Frolic, frolic,
and abandoned me pitilessly to this cruel fate. With what heartlessness could he shape a being such as I? And then, to cast me aside, solitary in a hostile world.
Hey, you big ugly snoop! What are you talking to?
Excuse me, my little friend. I am performing a soliloquy. You see, I...
Gosh, you're the ugliest thing I ever saw!
I must get out. It's too cramped. I can't move.
Such sportive innocence. Will you befriend me, little one?
Never. I'm cute and adorable and cherub-like and playful and sportive. You're ugly and repulsive.
Cherub in my eye. No, you are innocent and unprejudiced by the corrupting notions of society.
Where's the door?
You have lived too short a time to have imbibed the horror of deformity.
I can't find it.
I'm gonna throw rocks at you.
Except
for my foot. If I seize you and educate you, my companion.
Hey, let go of me!
I do not intend to harm you.
Ogre! Wretch! You must be the world's ugliest homeless person. My papa's a cynic. He's rich and powerful, and he'll punish you. He'll have the police pick you up for vagrancy and beat you up.
The door is stuck.
My papa's name is Frankenstein. And
what? Frankenstein is my enemy.
Open the door.
You're horrible and ugly. You're covered with scars and stitches.
Pitiless child, your words carry despair to my heart. He is dead. It is dreadful, but I am filled with dark exultation. I shall away now.
Oh, we're too late.
That poor obnoxious little boy.
We must go back in time again.
We can't. The cyberchronic transmigrator thing is stuck. It only goes forward now.
Then we must go forward a few days to Geneva. And find Dr. Frankenstein.
You mean we have to get back in that machine?
Yes. Come on.
Clerval, Elizabeth, it is I, Victor.
Clerval, look, it's Victor.
Victor, welcome back to Geneva.
It's good, Geneva.
You return at a sad time, Victor. Your brother, little William, has been foully murdered, and your father is stricken with grief.
Sadly, the servant maid, Justine Moritz, has been tried and convicted for the murder and is sentenced to hang. In fact, here she comes now under the scaffold.
It is horrible.
Make way for the condemned prisoner.
Justine?
Oh, Justine, how heartbreaking this is. Be brave, my friends. You who've been more than family to me. For though I know in my heart I am innocent, the legal system is not perfect, and now and then some unfortunate mistake must take place. Still, the law must be obeyed if a more or less effective sort of justice is to be perpetuated.
Oh, Justine, we know you are innocent. One cannot help but speculate that little William's tragic death is somehow related to the ominous rumors of a strange giant being who stalks the forests and mountains.
Oh, Elizabeth, dear cousin Clerval.
Dr. Frankenstein?
Yes, dear.
Who are these people?
Wandering vagabond idiots who followed me.
Doctor, I need to talk to you.
I really just want to get through this with some dignity.
Oh, brave, brave Justine. There's no question in our hearts that you are innocent, is there, Clerval?
It is a little odd how little William's locket found its way into Justine's room.
Wait, you mean this girl is going to get hanged on that kind of...
questionable circumstantial evidence, huh?
Clerval was supposed to file an appeal.
Yes, but I'm afraid I was so preoccupied with composing my volume of lyrical ballads...
that he neglected to file the appeal.
I'm sorry, Justine, it just takes so much concentration to compose fine verse, rhythm, imagery.
Of course, I understand. I accept my fate. Farewell.
Oh, it's horrible.
Yes.
I mean, it's impossible to get good help here in Geneva. How shall I ever find someone to do the windows now?
Oh, Victor, I have been raised with you as your stepsister, but ever have I longed to be joined to you in the bonds of wedlock?
Oh, yes, my dearest Elizabeth. I have always held you in the tenderest affection. But a dark matter hangs over my life.
What, dear Victor?
Wait!
You see,
what?
He ran off after making this big monster and...
Silence! I must leave here. I must go into the mountains and in solitude consider how I shall resolve my dark secret.
Oh, they're chasing Justine around the scaffold like a mad chicken.
I must go, dear Elizabeth.
Oh, they've caught her.
Oh, Victor, you're so mysterious and romantic.
Damn, there he goes again.
Dr. Frankenstein!
Go away. I'm brooding on my dark secret.
Hey, there's a storm coming.
Victor Frankenstein.
Yeah, you. It's you, the monster.
You have created me only to abandon me, desperate, isolated, hated by all who set eyes on me.
I'm gonna fall and break my neck.
Begone from me, foul and accursed fiend.
You created me. You cannot part from me.
What would you have of me?
Help me end my wretched solitude.
Why are we on this freaking snow-covered mountaintop in the middle of a hellacious thunderstorm?
It was you who killed little William.
I...
And Justine?
Yes, t'was I who hid the locket in her room.
Oh, come on. You mean to tell me this huge, 8-foot-tall, filthy, half-naked, completely freakish-looking monster could sneak unnoticed into a major wall-enclosed city, and then into the Frankenstein mansion, and then into a girl's room, and then all the way out again, and nobody noticed anything funny?
Ain't this weird, the book? Blackout a demon?
Mary, this is bogus.
My actions have been dictated by the cruel and corrupt nature of the human society I have encountered.
But surely your very statement presupposes a moral awareness beyond this malevolent behavioral socialization.
I have a basic, intrinsic human nature, which is good.
You are inhuman!
I am composed of portions of dozens, perhaps hundreds of men. In this respect, my individual human nature is formed from a composite of human natures, and thus a general human nature. I live outside of society and culture, therefore, in a state of nature beyond the corrupting influence of organized civilization, and so I am good.
This is a view of human nature reflected by the social doctrine of Jean-Jacques Rousseau.
I never heard of him.
But you assume there is such a thing as an essential human nature, which can be good or evil.
No, you're missing the point.
But either way, it's a cultural assumption. Generated by a given social context.
We're all going to die of exposure out here.
I was benevolent and good. Misery made me a fiend. Make me happy, and I shall again be virtuous.
Two words.
What can I do when the wretchedness is surely all out?
Hypothermia.
You must create a female for me.
Oh, no.
With whom I can live in the interchange of those sympathies necessary for my being.
You've got to be kidding.
Never shall I consent to create another like yourself.
Then I shall desolate your existence as you desolate mine. I shall murder all whom you love and hold dear.
I consent to your demand. On your solemn oath that you will leave the inhabited regions of the earth forever.
I swear that if you provide me with a mate, we shall go to the most remote and unpopulated reaches of South America. And there I shall propagate my own kind and be content.
So be it.
I will go now and leave you to return to Geneva and carry out this task.
Hey, you're the monster, right? I mean, you seem all wrong. You should have those big bolts in your neck. You don't have those big bolts.
Mm.
And your head is supposed to be flat on top. Your head's not flat. See, there's something wrong with you.
Huh?
And you talk. You're not supposed to talk. You're just supposed to grunt and growl and make monster noises.
What? No, Dory. In Mary's novel, the monster is very articulate and a skilled rhetorician.
Well...
No, here, I'll show you. You're supposed to walk around all stiff and awkward. With your arms out in front of you, see? Here, look. Watch me. Like this.
I will go now, Frankenstein. But remember your promise.
Wow, look at him go. Look how he runs and jumps over the rocks and boulders. He's so nimble. This is all whack.
Frankenstein, listen to me.
I will not create another monster. I will leave Switzerland.
Oh, right, and go to Transylvania.
No, England.
Huh?
Here I am on a forlorn and isolated island in the Orkneys. I have traveled across Europe and the British Isles, hounded and shelved by the vile creature I created. And now?
Huh. So the whole novel actually opens with a series of letters from the sea captain guy who's sailing to the North Pole. And it's almost the end of the story.
Structurally, he's the most complex, innovative novel.
Will you both shut up? I need to get out of here. I can't breathe.
Oh, God.
Frankenstein, again, did you think you could escape me? You promised to create a mate for me.
Oh, it's stifling in there.
Needs of dramamine dispenser.
Ventilation.
Who are those people?
Never mind. Look, you murdered my dear friend and cousin Clever.
As I warned you.
What? When?
A previous episode. Look, we just don't have time to go through the whole story scene by scene.
I thought he was an interesting character. I wanted to see how he would develop. He just had a few lines. It's not fair.
That's what I say.
Silence! You're disrupting the narrative focus. Doctor?
Yes, all right. To preserve the cohesion of the plot and end these senseless killings, I will agree to construct a mate for you.
Good. Now, she must have a complete and functional reproductive anatomy. See? I've made up some drawings. She must have fallopian tubes, ovaries, uterus, cervix. Are these nutty bits here?
Yes, I see.
Why?
What?
Why does she have to have a functional reproductive anatomy?
Because, so that I can live in the interchange of those sympathies necessary for my being. You are young, perhaps, and you do not understand that monsters have special monster needs.
Okay, so maybe you want to have hot, wild monster sex with whatever it is he's going to stitch together for you, but why does it have to have a functional reproductive system? You really need to make little baby monsters.
Yes, this does seem to be a possible flaw in the plot.
No,
If it is to be a true female creature in the fullest sense, then it must have a functional reproductive anatomy. Otherwise, my relationship to it could be construed as abnormal or unhealthy, prone to psychological frustrations and deviancy.
God, you are like a really uptight monster. Okay, whatever.
I will begin work. Here I am, several days later. Actually, a cold, bleak, and windy night.
Hi, Dr. Frankenstein. How's the project going?
My work has progressed quickly. Soon it shall be completed.
Yeah, nice. She certainly is, striking.
Doctor, your work has gone well. Surely this is absolute proof of your incomparable genius.
Yes, you see, I'm putting in the fallopian tubes and ovaries.
Ah, excellent. Our affection for one another will be perfectly normal and natural. Oh, and doctor, she must have those things, you know, on her chest. Oh.
Yes, of course. Could you go outside while I'm working? It's rather awkward with you watching.
Yes, of course. I'll just go out here and pace back for that second. You won't even know I'm here.
Doctor, where did you get all these more or less fresh human body parts on this island? Oh, I'm sorry. I don't want to bog down the plot.
It's vile. Unbearable. Putting together a female reproductive anatomy like this.
How can this work on a cellular level? I mean, the DNA and all. The body is put together out of bits and pieces.
What?
This reproductive system you're putting together, how can it work on a microbiological level?
You mean the inner workings of the female's monads and the homunculus?
Oh, right. Yeah, never mind.
I can stand the more of these things with an abomination against God and nature. I must not create this thing. I must destroy it. Destroy!
Hey, wait! You're wrecking the female monster.
I must destroy.
Doctor!
Destroy!
What have you done?
Get your elbow in my eye.
Let me get the door. Quick, I'm gonna hurl. I am so dizzy. Where are we?
I'm so faint.
Look, immense rugged mountains of ice, a vast, desolate, frozen expanse.
A breathtakingly endless, uninhabitable desert waste of towering glaciers and icy waters.
It's also stunningly scenic and dramatically backlit.
Freezing. Yes, I fear we shall soon perish of exposure. Our ship, its tall masts hung with wasp glazed canvas and icicles.
Funny, I didn't notice that when we first got out of the...
Hey! Drop a ladder, lads, alas! Climb aboard, ye hapless lovers! Let ye soon perish of exposure!
Ow! My head!
The rope ladder, ye scurvy swabs! The rope ladder, oh, secured to the gunwale reel! Just allow the stranded lovers to clamber upon deck!
Ow! Ow!
Okay. Thank you, and thanks be to God!
Time ye lively, ye sorry floor rats! Come and tell us by what foolhardy ways ye find yourselves lost in this most awesome desolate waste of jagged towering ice mountains, known only to those doleful phantoms that haunt this frozen region. Avast, me hearty, belay the knees.
Let go of my foot. Stop holding my leg. Sorry.
Arr, no, it's true. Doleful phantoms. And I really do talk this way all the time.
Ow, you're stepping on my head.
Sorry.
For by Davy Jones Locker, I've hoisted the jib and turned the capstan with many a scurvy salt.
I'm trash already.
Our humble thanks, Captain.
Welcome aboard His Majesty's ship, Samuel Taylor Coleridge, on a voyage of discovery to the North Pole. I'm Captain Walton, Mr. Starbuck.
Aye, Captain.
Fire! Put on a pot of hot coffee.
Aye, aye, Captain.
You lovers will go to my cabin, where I soon join you. Make lively, lads. More accordion music. Tack the mainsail. Secure the rigging. Brace the bowsprit. Transition to the next scene.
Yo-ho, 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 a sailor's life for me. Yo-ho, yo-ho, this is the start for me. Yo-ho, yo-ho.
It would seem that Captain Walton has not yet found Dr. Frankenstein. This guy is one of your characters? He's not quite what I had in mind.
Shiver me timbers! Avast, me hearties! Well, hey, Mr. Starbuck. How now, me lovers?
Hi, Captain. We're just fine now.
Over on the grog.
No. Thank you, no. I'll have more cocoa. It's really good.
Hey, we've hauled your strange machine up on deck for ye. Arr, 'tis a room of thing as I've seen.
Captain Walton, I see by your particular sort of very genial, if strained, relationship with your crew that you were an orphan raised by your older sister, with whom you still maintain a deeply close relationship, a relationship which has profoundly shaped your character.
How remarkably insightful you are. Yes, well, I suppose I would rather enjoy a cup of cocoa myself. It's been beastly cold out.
Oh, what's happened to your vernacular?
I do enjoy the whole salty sea dog performance, and it inspires confidence in the men.
Captain Walton, sir, we've rescued another lost traveler adrift on an ice floe with a sledge and but one dog still alive.
What's that, Mr. Starbuck? Bring the poor scurvy lover to my captain here. Belay! Avast and her!
Frappuccino, sir?
Hey, thank you, lad. Vocal lashes, all around.
You must, must stop you. Must... before it's too late.
It's Dr. Frankenstein.
Little William, Elizabeth, Cleval, Justine, must stop, monster.
He's in bad shape. He stopped using definite articles.
Arr, place him by the letty machine where it's warm. Rub him with brandy. Give him an Irish moker. Why have you come so far this frozen desolation, sir? What do you seek?
I seek the one who fled from me.
Did the man whom you pursued travel in the same fashion?
Yes.
Then I fancy we did see him. For the day before, we saw some dogs drawing a sledge with a man in it across the ice.
Ooh, the monster.
Well, which direction? I must catch him. Help me.
Arr, settle you down, mate. What's this all about?
Well, you may easily perceive, Captain.
Walton! Captain Robert Walton!
That I have suffered great and unparalleled misfortunes.
You see, what happened is he made this creature out of pieces of dead bodies he dug up. He brought this thing to life, but then he was so disgusted by it that he just abandoned it. So it wandered off on its own, and it had a really bad time, and that made it go psycho, so it ran around killing people.
What?
Particularly his friends and loved ones.
Then the monster tried to force Dr. Frankenstein to build a mate for him, which he started to do. But he changed his mind for reasons we won't get into, and then he set off after the monster.
Pursued him relentlessly. Even to here, the northernmost extremity of the Earth.
That's the wildest story I've ever heard.
Captain Walton, sir, the ice floes have closed in and we are becalmed. We've almost run out of food. The men insist you speak with them on deck.
Insist! I'll have words with them indeed. Up on deck, then.
Oh, my gosh.
What means this?
Actually, Captain Walton, sir. Sir, I've been chosen by the crew as a spokesman.
You?
Sir, we have a list of demands. That is, an initial statement of points for negotiation. There are 12 points to be resolved. This was drawn up initially by a crisis committee, which was selected after nominations and open debate by a general meeting of all crew persons, save those on ship's watch at the time of this meeting, who in turn were allowed to review the recorded proceedings of that first meeting and take the floor individually in the subsequent meeting to respond to the initial proceedings and appeal directly to the general membership as to the results of those initial proceedings. And those men on watch during the subsequent meeting were in turn... Anyway, so the crisis committee was established and its membership fully ratified by a secret election of the full crew membership.
What is the point of all this?
To establish a satisfactory democratic process given the completely dire situation we find ourselves in, we feel we really must turn back.
We've scarcely a day's worth of frappuccinos left, sir.
So it's mutiny, is it? You scurvy swabs would dare cross cutlass with Captain Woman! Well, I've got me pistol out,
Captain.
And I'll shoot the first scurvy swab who lifts a hand against me.
No, Captain, please.
I thought you were true men of valor.
Yes, sir.
Back to your places. I'll be below decks now tending to Dr. Frankenstein. You lovers come with me.
This is high-handed and authoritarian, but damn it, you're so commanding, sir.
I'll shoot the first scurvy so-and-so who...
Stay your hand, Captain.
Good Lord. What is this towering, ghastly, giant figure who stands at the open window of my cabin?
The creature!
The creature,
There's no pulse. Dr. Frankenstein is... dead.
But soon I shall die. And what I now feel... be no longer felt.
That's odd grammar.
Yeah, but look, that's the way it's written in the book here. See?
Oh, yes.
I shall ascend my funeral pile triumphantly
and exult in the agony of the torturing flames.
The light of that conflagration
will fade away.
Do you mind? This is my final soliloquy.
Sorry, go ahead.
The light of that conflagration will fade away. My ashes will be swept into the sea by winds. My spirit will sleep in peace. Farewell.
Or if it thinks it shall not surely think thus.
What? Yes, yes. Or if it thinks it shall not surely think thus. Farewell!
Oh, my God. He just, like, totally jumped out of the cabin window onto that small ice floe down there.
Now, this means he intends to kill himself?
Well, yeah, it sounded like he was gonna, like, make a big fire, climb on top of it, and burn himself up.
But how the devil is he going to build a pyre here in this absolutely desolate waste of ice? I mean, there is no wood for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of miles. There's nothing but snow and ice.
Yeah, but you know, he has a heck of a lot of stamina. He's really motivated.
I find this particularly queer, though, in that while, as I've understood this narrative thus far, all the other fatalities which have been depicted or related have been direct and unambiguous. This is ending rather at loose ends. Can we really be satisfactorily certain that this frightful brute is going to actually do himself in?
It's your own fault. You got the pistol. You could have shot him.
I confess, I was rather caught up in trying to follow his dramatic monologue.
This is just the way it ends here in the book. It just says, he sprung from the cabin window upon the ice raft which lay close by. He was soon borne away by the waves and lost in the darkness and distance. The end.
I suspect that most readers and critics will take the creature at his word and assume he will go away and die now. And yet, there must remain a lingering note of doubt.
This is a really lame ending, Mary.
It would have been a simple matter to provide a clear ending.
I mean, he's just standing on that little chunk of ice. Like he's waiting for a bus or something.
This is so awkward.
No! It's like, should we wait?
All right, please.
Were you planning a sequel and you never got around to it?
Look, this seemed to me the way the story should end.
It looks like it's set up for a sequel.
Does that idiot really think he's going to find a lot of firewood now?
Maybe he was speaking of a pyre in a metaphorical sense, in the Gothic, romantic, Byronic sense.
Oh, the Byrony of it all.
The ambiguity must be intentional. Or is it, Mrs. Shelley, that you found in the end that you could not bring yourself to destroy the creature, which, in a sense, you yourself had created?
Yes, fine, as you like it, whatever you will. I think what is needed is just a dignified, dramatic silence that will end the story.
All right. I'm due back in the 20th century. I've got a very unfavorable book report to hand in.
Wait for me. I want to go to the early Victorian era and meet Edgar Allan Poe.
Captain Walton, the ice is parting. The wind is rising. We can make sail.
Wait for me.
Okay, let's pile into the time machine.
Ahoy, Captain, sir. It's the Ancient Mariner off the starboard bow.
God, we must be way off course.
You have just heard Back to Frankenstein by Les Light from some kind of an audio class at the University of California, Davis. Please refer to the beginning of this program for the rest of the credits, which don't fit back here. I'm Jerry Stearns, and you have been listening to Sound Effects, a Radio Playground, modern audio theater on the Sunday night broadcast closest to this year's Scary Day. I hope you have a good Scary Day when it finally comes around. What's not scary is Abby's Room for One, which is Music Till Midnight next. Sound Effects, a Radio Playground, the best in audio theater, comedy, and the audio arts, a medium where almost everything is left to your imagination.
Hey there, music heads. DJ Shrimp Chips here, letting you know that MSG Radio is moving from Thursday mornings to Tuesdays 6 to 7 p.m. I'll still be serving up the same tasty umami flavor, just at a new and improved time. For those new to the show, MSG explores the intersection of Asian diaspora, experimental music, and electronica. From there, sky's the limit. So join me, DJ Shrimp Chips, on Tuesdays 6 to 7 p.m. for MSG Radio, the sound of umami.
Programming on KFAI is supported in part by Health Partners. Minnesotans age 65 plus might qualify for Health Partners Minnesota Senior Health Options. The plan includes personal support, coverage for medical, prescription drugs and dental, plus many extra benefits. Eligibility information is available at healthpartners.com/oneplan. Health Partners is a health plan that contracts with both Medicare and the Minnesota Medical Assistance Medicaid program to provide benefits of both programs to enrollees. Enrollment in Health Partners depends on contract renewal. More information at healthpartners.com/oneplan.
In recognition of the freedom of speech protections on